OLTU.com,
the home of quality podcasts.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 197 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And about a week and a half ago, I got an email from Landon Michelson, otherwise known as BK Secret Photo. We actually had Landon on this podcast as a guest many, many, many moons ago. And he wrote to me in response to my discussion on the panoramic head issue of, you know, or actually not having a panoramic head, and the issues that I was having with shooting a panorama on my tripod when I've got a vertical grip attached to the bottom of my camera, which of course moves the axis of the lens even further away from the vertical rotation point of the center of the tripod. Anyway, this is what Landon had to say. Been far too long since I communicated with you. I shoot a lot of panos and I own a Nodal Ninja 5, which is a professional panoramic head, with an RD16 rotator. Great tool for dedicated pano work. Sounds like what you really need is simply an L bracket. That way your lens will be centered on the tripod head in landscape and portrait modes. That doesn't address the front-back adjustment for the nodal point, but at least it would solve your immediate problem. I just led a class to our local photography club on panos, so we addressed all the issues and how to overcome them. Happy pano shooting. Well, thank you, Landon. I will look into L brackets. I would assume that because they don't allow for that sort of front to back alignment as well, that they're probably cheaper than a full-on panoramic head. So I will look into that and decide whether or not it's worth, you know, only going halfway, or whether I should just, you know, splash out and get the full, you know, like the Nodal Ninja 5, you know, full panoramic head that'll allow me to do everything and do it right. So I shall look into that, mate. Thank you. So I appreciate that. And then I was sitting on Facebook today and Ernie Barrett contacted me, and Ernie's been a listener to many of my podcasts, my audio podcast as well as this photography podcast. And he buzzed me today on Facebook and he said, did you get this email that I sent you a while back? And I went, oh, I don't remember it. Flick it to me again, you know. So he sent it to me again. And to be honest, I haven't even pre-read this. So forgive me if I stumble through this. I'll do my best. But apparently he sent this back in March of last year. So it's been 12 months since he sent this email. Hey, Bruce and Shelton. Well, that immediately dates it. Been slowly catching up with listening to all the Shutters Inc. podcasts, going back and forth to past and present when work and friends permit me, lol. Seeing how I've listened to every sign language and building the pod episode, but either way, I love it all. Can you say I'm a bit obsessed much? Well, got two questions. Number one, do all cameras have dead or stuck pixels? Now, before you answer that, let me say I've searched Google from top to bottom on the difference between a dead and a stuck pixel. And honestly, I'm tired of reading. One person says this, one person says that, yada, yada, yada. You know how it goes. I've had various prosumer cameras in the past, and all of them have had dead pixels. A Fuji S5200, a Nikon P100, a Canon SX... 20, I think that's a 20IS or a 201S, one or the other. I bought and returned three, apparently. Wow. A Canon G11, and the least of them, the Canon S31S or S3IS, whatever that is. Because I'm not sure if it's an I or a 1. Anyway, in order from most dead pixels to least dead pixels, all brand new, all now sold. I'd used the Fuji S5200 despite the insane amount of dead pixels it had out of the box. I just loved the color it produced, and you could literally throw this thing across the yard and it would survive. But I sold it to help pay for my... I hope you didn't actually do that in order to prove the point, Ernie, but anyway. But I sold it to help pay for my DSLR and did like Bruce said, just got a body and spent the extra money on good lenses. I've made the jump to SLR and bought an Olympus E500, just a beginner model. This of which also has them meaning dead pixels. By now, I'm sure you're thinking, does this guy even know what a dead pixel looks like? And yes, I can assure you that I do. So either A, this is very common, or B, I just have extremely bad luck. And or if there's a semi way to fix them in camera without post-processing. I've heard all kinds of things from taking long exposures, tried it, didn't work, to excessively shaking the camera like a can of spray paint. This is, which I'm almost desperate to try, but scared. So please shed some light in hopes to hear that I'm not crazy. My camera has a pixel mapping feature, which I assume is supposed to help, but says not to do this too often. Simple number two. What process do you guys take to clean your lenses and filters? I've tried a lot, and what works for me on these fake plastic and glass filters is rubbing alcohol and a plain, clean bath towel. But I've been scared to take anything to the lens of my camera and lenses itself. Well, really enjoying the podcast. I think I might hold a record to listening to all of the podcasts. I don't email much. I prefer to just shut up and listen. But sometimes I have questions that I can't seem to find answers to. And as one listener said on Shutters Inc., I hope this podcast goes on forever. You guys better not let me down. LOL. Thanks so much. Take care. Ernie, thank you for the email, and apologies if it's taken us 12 months to get around to answering it, but hey, I only got it today. Look, that's really interesting that you've had that many cameras with dead and or stuck pixels. I have obviously been extraordinarily lucky because I have bought two digital SLRs, the Konica Minolta 7D and now my Sony Alpha 850. And not have one. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say you have been extraordinarily unlucky. I don't know how many other listeners out there have ever had an issue with dead or stuck pixels on a brand new body straight out of the box. Let us know. If anyone's got any tips for Ernie on ways to address dead pixels, give us a yell. Why do I get the feeling that we did cover this email? Am I imagining things, or did we actually... Hey, Ernie, are you sure you listened to all the episodes? Because I don't know. There's something about this that... I don't know. It's like that little itch in the back of your mind that you can't shake. Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that somewhere along the lines I've read an email. If not this email, an email similar to it. Anyway, there were some other things in there that I wanted to address. I just love the colour it produced. You can literally throw this thing across the yard, which I hope you haven't done. Oh, the shaking thing. Now, Ernie, I don't know whether the shaking thing would do any good. Like I said, I've never had a camera with a dead or stuck pixel, so I've never had cause to shake a digital SLR body vigorously like it was a can of spray paint. But here's my thing. Other than the mirror assembly, there are really no moving parts inside a digital SLR body. You know, other than the flip-up mirror, well, and the shutter, that's pretty much it. Well, yeah, I suppose the shutter could be a little bit sensitive. I was going to say, you know, that, you know, the absence of moving parts would tend to suggest that shaking the camera shouldn't be an issue, but I suppose it depends on how ruggedly the shutter assembly is built. Because that would be the only thing that I could think that you might damage within the camera by shaking it vigorously. But as for shaking it vigorously being a way to fix stuck or dead pixels, I actually can't imagine that that would do anything, because that's an electronic fault, or at least a dead pixel is, and I suppose a stuck pixel is as well. For those who don't know the difference, a dead pixel is a pixel that is always black. A stuck pixel is a pixel that is always lit up and is white. At least that's my understanding. If anyone's got an alternate interpretation of what constitutes a dead pixel or a stuck pixel, then let me know. But that's my understanding of it. The other thing, I guess getting back to the very start of that question, Ernie, was, you know, how do we clean our cameras? A couple of years ago at PMA, I talked to the guys from LensPen, and they actually gave me one of their cleaning kits, and I've got to say, that thing is awesome. Even if I hadn't been given one, I would have probably gone out and paid for one. Not cheap, they're about $100 Australian, so that's probably about 20 cents American. sorry, Ernie. So it's probably, would it be about 70 or 80 bucks American, I guess. Fantastic little device. It's like a little black cylinder, about 3-4 inches across, stands about 6 inches high. And what you do, this is for cleaning your sensor, of course, not your lens. And you take the lens off the SLR body, you put the SLR into cleaning mode, and then you put this little thingy over the top, and it has a magnifying glass and four LED lights that shine down onto the sensor inside your camera. And then you have the pen that comes with it, which is the lens pen, and it's basically a pen with a hinge in the middle of it, so you can get the head at a, you know, like a 60 degree angle to the body of the pen, and it has a little felt tip on the end of it, and it allows you, by looking down through the magnifying glass with the lights shining on the sensor, you can see every tiny speck of dust on the sensor of your camera. And using the felt tip, you can then just gently just lift off these pieces of fluff from the sensor, and it does an absolutely amazing job. In terms of actually cleaning your lenses, I personally just use a lint-free cloth, which you can get, well, go to any photographic show, every second stand is giving them away by the handful. Or if you wear glasses, like I do, any optometry store will have lint-free cloths. And I usually, I don't know, maybe there's a reason for not doing it, but I just give it a bit of a huff on the rear and the front lens elements, and then just, you know, wipe it off with the lint-free cloth. That's my approach. Keen to hear other people's approaches. I'm not sure about the alcohol. I suppose that would be okay on a glass element. I don't know how it goes on a plastic element. It would depend. As long as there was no coating on there, I guess it would be okay. Yeah, that's my thoughts. So that's cleaning lenses and filters. And I think that's about it. As for the podcast going on forever, I will do my best, Ernie. Obviously, Shelton is no longer with us. He's chosen to, well, he's not dead. He's just not part of the podcast anymore. He has told me he will come back for the 200th episode, so we're getting close to that. So I'll have to start G'ing him up and say, oi, you said you'd come back for the 200th. So anyway, I hope that addresses your queries, Ernie. And if anyone's got anything that they would like to, you know, throw into the mix in regards answers to any of Ernie's questions, please drop me an email to studio@audiotu.com. Now, a couple of weekends ago, Chris Bellier and myself hired Think Studio at Epping in Sydney's northern suburbs to do a fashion shoot. And after the shoot, when we paid the model, we paid the makeup artist, paid for the studio, paid for everything. And a few days later, the model asked for us if she could have high-res copies of the images. And I just went, oh, yeah, whatever, you know, and rendered out some high-res images from Lightroom because, you know, I shoot everything in RAW, so just rendered off some big JPEGs for her and sent them over. And Chris got in touch and he said, mate, did you get an inquiry about some high-res images from that shoot? And I said, yeah, and send them off and blah, blah, blah. He said, at what point does, you know, where do you draw the line between if the model's being paid and she's then turning around asking for prints, which is essentially a TFP shoot, a time for prints, you know, where's the line in the middle? And I thought, that's interesting. And Chris apparently follows the forum on Model Mayhem, and apparently this question had come up on Model Mayhem as well, that you know, people were paying a model to, you know, do a shoot, and then later on the model's turning around and saying, can I get, you know, high-res copies for my portfolio? And it's kind of like, well, you either do time for prints or we pay you and you don't get the prints. And so I'm not sure what the answer is. So I just thought I'd throw this out there to anybody else who's working with models. What are your thoughts? Do you think a model should be entitled to prints regardless of whether she's been paid to model for you? Or do you think if you have paid her, then that is the end of your obligation to her? Or him, as the case may be. Yeah, interesting little question. So yeah, you kind of wonder, okay, where's the line between what's straight TFP and, you know, if it's a paid thing, should she then be paying you for a high-res image? Anyway, keen to hear your thoughts. And then last Friday, a week ago today, we had meetup number 22 for the Sydney group, which was our Bonnie and Clyde shoot, and we again hired the same studio. I had originally planned for that shoot to be an outdoor shoot with a vintage motor car and, you know, a nice dark alley and fog machines and, you know, the usual sort of film noir kind of look, but with our models specifically looking like Bonnie and Clyde. And if you've been following the weather, well, if you're in Australia, you know what's going on. If you're overseas, you probably aren't following what the Australian weather is doing. But let me tell you, we have had the craziest excuse for a summer over the, you know, 3 months of December, January, February here on the east coast of Australia. Just absolutely bizarre. Sydney, as a rule of thumb, generally gets highs around, you know, the low to mid 40s centigrade. And on a hot, hot year, we'll sometimes get, you know, peaks in summer of, you know, 47 degrees, yeah, or somewhere up around there, which is well over the ton for those of us, you know, for those of you who count in Fahrenheit. This year, the entire summer, the hottest day in Sydney was 33 degrees. That's not even 100 degrees Fahrenheit. It is, you know, considerably less. Like, because I think 37 centigrade is 100 Fahrenheit, you know. And we just had rain, and a little bit more rain just for something different. And so, you know, we're obviously we're now out of summer. We're into autumn now. And it hasn't let up. In fact, if anything, it's got wetter. We've had even more rain, and, you know, half of New South Wales is now underwater. All of which is to say that the planning for the Bonnie and Clyde shoot just went totally out the window and under the water, I would venture to say, by the preceding Saturday, when we were then starting to get a 7-day forecast, which actually covered the day on which the shoot was planned. It was fairly obvious that the likelihood of it being raining on that Friday night when we were going to be shooting was fairly high. It was a fairly high likelihood that it was going to be raining. So I started thinking, okay, I need to come up with a contingency. It's probably not going to be an outdoor shoot. So I said to Chris, can you give that guy a call, see if we can get hold of the studio on the Friday night? He could, we did, we booked it. And so we decided to move it indoors. So I thought, okay, what can I do for Bonnie and Clyde now that I've got, you know, models and makeup artists? I've now got a studio to shoot in, but obviously I can't put a car in the studio because this is a, you know, a tiny little room of, you know, 5 meters wide, 10 meters deep, but it's upstairs, up a narrow, you know, staircase, you know, and there's no getting a car in there. What are we going to do? So I got inventive and found some samples of US currency and laid them up 6 to an A4 sheet, printed off 100 copies of that, cut it all up, had 600 notes, single-sided of course, and only in black and white, but hey, it did the job. And so we used those as props and, you know, found a nice steel bar that Max had discovered somewhere and left in my garage. And I thought, yeah, that looks like a pretty nasty looking kind of weapon. That's the sort of thing Clyde would probably have done, you know, use a steel bar to cave somebody's head in. So we took that along and, yeah, a few other bits and pieces, hired some costumes from Jeff Walsh in Canterbury, who's got the most amazing collection of costumes in Sydney. It's just phenomenal. And, yeah, and it ended up being a really good shoot, even though we, you know, had to make a lot of last-minute changes in those, you know, last 7 days. If you haven't seen the images, I've put some of them up on brucewilliamsphotography.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. And I also posted them up in the Sydney Photographers Meetup group on Facebook, so if you want to check them out, you can check them out there. Meetup number 23 is going to be a Black Friday themed shoot on the 13th of April in Sydney, and it's going to be at Dragon Image in Artarmon. So if there's anyone listening to this podcast who's been thinking about it, been kicking around the idea of coming to one of these shoots and you've never got around to it, join up the group on Facebook and come and join us. I have got a quote unquote a model, Deborah. She's a friend of mine and also an audio client of mine. She's a voice coach. And she works with a lot of aspiring voice talent and helps them to get to a point where they're ready to produce a demo. And then she comes to me and I help produce a commercial demo for these voice talents. And Deborah just has this great look. And what I decided for this particular shoot, for this Black Friday shoot, was that I would have like a European gypsy kind of look with, you know, the tarot cards and crystal ball, black cat, all that kind of stuff. So that's what we're planning for the next shoot. So it's Friday the 13th of April at Dragon Image in Artarmon. So jump on Facebook, become a member of the group, sign up if you're interested in coming along. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, what else have I got on my list here? The next Instinctive Desires Focus on Business, which will also be held at Dragon Image, is on the 13th of March, which is this Tuesday coming. So, and that's all on social media and, you know, online marketing and stuff like that. So, again, if you're, you know, trying to get your business up and running, your photography business up and running, and you feel like you need a little bit of guidance with regards online marketing and social media and that kind of stuff, this could be a great one to come along to. I'll put a link to Instinctive Desires on the show notes for this episode, so you can click on that if you want to come along and join in. Lightroom 4 is out now as well. You probably are already aware that it's out, with typically weird pricing structures. I do not understand how a digital download can be $79 US if you live in America and $129 US if you live in Australia. Go figure. $50 difference for a digital product. It's not like they're shipping you a box. You know, so, sorry. I struggle with that, but anyway, it is out. That is the upgrade pricing. I'm not sure of the total, you know, outright purchase price. I should have looked that up before I started recording, but I didn't. But I will find links to the store if you are interested in buying Lightroom 4. I've got to say, I do like it. There are some nifty new features, particularly the ability to do custom white balances on portions of an image. So you can now, using an adjustment brush where you just paint certain parts of the image, you can now do a white balance adjustment with an adjustment brush. So if you end up with a shot where, you know, maybe you've lit somebody up with a flashlight, but you haven't had a gel to balance your flash along with, say, a tungsten light that was in the same environment, so you've got one half of the image really warm and the other half is, you know, flash balanced, you can then use a, you know, white balance adjustment brush to paint over the, well, either the warm area if you want to cool it down, or over the area that's been lit with the flash if you want to warm it up to bring it closer to the tungsten white balance. Things like that are just fantastic. Yeah, I'm absolutely loving 4. I know some people have got issues with the fact that you can't import your presets from version 3 because of different working paradigms between Lightroom 3 and Lightroom 4. And I'm sure over the coming weeks, people will come up with ways and means of, you know, compensating for that. Either that or you just recreate your actions and your presets and whatnot in Lightroom 4 and you move on. I must admit, I only have a handful of presets that I've created, and if they don't import into 4, well then so be it, I'll just recreate them. I'm not going to be too concerned about it, to be honest. Anyway, and the other thing that I wanted to mention was, as most of you know, I was, 5 years ago, recording some video training for lynda.com. And of course, they were audio-related titles. They weren't photographic-related. At the time, I didn't know anywhere near enough about photography to contemplate doing that. But as a result, because I am still considered an author for lynda.com, I obviously keep getting emails from them, and some of those emails are just straight marketing stuff that they send to everybody on their mailing list. And one of those emails is the new releases each month. And I just happened to be scrolling through that email when it came in a couple of days ago, and there were a couple of titles on there that I thought were worthy of mentioning. One was a fellow called Ben Long has done a training title for Lynda on Capture NX2. Now, I've not used any other form of RAW processing engine than Adobe Camera Raw, either through Photoshop or Bridge or Lightroom. But I do know that there are some people who absolutely rave about Capture NX2, and I have heard people say that they think it does a better job of RAW conversion than Adobe Camera Raw. Like I said, I've not tried it, so I can't speak for it, but if you're one of those people who has either got it but doesn't know enough about it, or you're one of those people who's heard about how good it is but haven't got around to giving it a go yet, and you are considering doing that, then the essential training guide at Lynda for Capture NX2 might be worth a bit of a look. The thing about lynda.com is, you know, obviously I have a vested interest as an author, but I have to say, even if I wasn't an author, I would still say what they do is absolutely fantastic. I think it's $25 a month to watch all the video training that you can absorb. You don't download it, you stream it through a web browser. But their technology that runs the back end of lynda.com is phenomenal. It works beautifully, it streams well, the video quality is awesome, their production quality is second to none. So I just thought I'd mention that, the Capture NX2 Essential Training from Ben Long. And another guy who has done quite a few training titles for Lynda in the past is a guy called Chris Orwig, who is a Santa Barbara-based photographer there in California. And he's just done a Lightroom 4 new features video training title. So if you are thinking of diving into Lightroom 4, or you already have but you feel like you're scratching around in the dark with it, you might want to check out his Lightroom 4 new features training title as well. Alrighty, covered a little bit of ground this week. I hope some of it was useful. And I am in the process, I'm not going to announce it right now, but I am in the process of organising an interview for next week with a well-known Australian photographer, but not to talk about his photography. Yeah, there you go, nice little tease. Going to talk about something else. Anyway, hopefully that will all fall into place, but I won't mention who it is or what we're going to be talking about, just in case it doesn't come off for next week. He has expressed a definite interest in coming on the podcast and having a chat about what it is we want to talk about, but I don't know yet whether or not he's available next week, so we will leave it there for now. All right, that will do it. If you've got any questions or comments or feedback, please drop me an email. I don't know why I say this every week, because it's all in the closer, but I suppose you probably don't listen to the closer because you hear me say cheers for now and you probably hit skip to the next track. But anyway, so that will do it for this week, and until I speak with you next, take care.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email studio@audiotoyou.com.